Is that a sober? That was just like it.
A certain amount has been written that the Mexican-American vote and the black vote both were fairly light in Yarborough's race in which he lost. Is that true, and if so, is there any explanation as to why?
I don't know that that is true. It might have been light turnout, but it was light turnout all over, if I remember correctly. I would venture to guess that of the Mexican Americans and blacks that turned out, probably Yarborough got anywhere from 80 to 90 or more percent. I don't remember that it was, he didn't get that much of the vote.
Well, my understanding was he got most of it that came out, but the vote itself was fairly light within the Mexican-American communities. There was not a heavy turnout.
I don't remember that to be, if it was light, it's because it was light all over, for whatever reasons. Was light all over, my opinion. But
what sort of issues are you especially interested in the legislature?
Oh, a bunch of them. One of the most important is the financing of our public schools here in Texas. As you may have heard about, it's very unequal education going on in Texas because of the way that the monies are raised and because of the way the school systems are funded. We have some very, very poor school districts in terms of money, in terms of academic excellence. We have some very, very rich school districts in both those areas also. And what we'll be trying to do this coming session is come up with a method of taxation in the area of property taxation, some reform there, and then also equalizing educational excellence and opportunity in this state. That's one of the most important ones. Of course, added to that will be efforts in bilingual education and salaries for teachers, increases in facilities, so on. A number of other areas which have to do with regulating utility companies here. We hope to establish, or I hope to have us establish a public utilities commission. I'm very interested in single-member districts, that we do have them come about in this county and in a number of other counties in the state. So it'll give an opportunity to more minorities to participate in politics, and also more individuals who aren't necessarily rich to participate in politics. It takes a lot less money to run a single member district than it does in a whole county like this, or multi member counties. Let's see, There are a number of other issues, a whole bunch. Those are a couple. I'm also interested, of course, in establishing some good laws with teeth for the environment. I'm interested in further developing our abilities to provide special programs for the disadvantaged, be they Mexican-American, black, or white, manpower training programs, adult education programs.
Does Texas have much of a junior college system?
It's starting. In the last few years, there have been many more junior colleges set up throughout the state. Further, there are more, we're seeing more establishment of community colleges. Like here in Austin, we now have Austin Community College, and different parts of the state, they're setting up community colleges, which is really good for the people in lower middle class and poor, to, for them to have the opportunity to attend some of those educational institutions.
Is there any work to get a Human Relations Commission statewide?
Yes, there is also work along that line. We seem to have so many problems that sometimes we forget about very important things like that. There is an effort to have the Equal Rights Amendment rescinded. It seems to be an effort of right-wing extremist to have that ERA rescinded. I don't think it'll get anywhere. Well, like I say, there are numerous other issues. Those are some of the ones I think are most important. One of the things that I hope to see, as I was talking a while ago, is one of these days having a living wage for state legislators. I believe California pays, what, $20,000, $25,000 a year. $4,800 just ain't going to make it. One of our...
That would require a constitutional amendment, wouldn't it?
Yeah. One of our state reps from Dallas, well, Paul Ragsdale, if you talk to him, you might ask him about this, was getting quite a bit of publicity because he was going to be eligible for food stamps, be a state rep on food stamps. Which is not unusual if you don't have a lot of money in the bank. A lot of our state employees are on food stamps. I understand that some of our highway patrolmen are on food stamps. That's a kind of situation we have in Texas. There's a lot of money in Texas, but obviously we have not in this state put it in the areas of human need.
Why not? Why is it one of the wealthiest states? Not the wealthiest.
Well, I think
ranked so low in all indices.
I think that the money is being controlled by a few people that just don't want to give it up and spread it around a little bit. I think they're greedy. I don't think they give a damn about human beings, and we're just going to have to do something about it through legislation and other ways. It's ridiculous, you know. Like you say, Texas has often been number one in the nation in football and number one in the Southwest Conference. Some good, strong football teams and other things like that. But in terms of mental health, in terms of state employee pay, in terms of education, in terms of the poor, it's ridiculous. And we've talked in the past few minutes about why. So the whys of some of that. But the people that have been in control of Texas, the John Connollys, some of that old crowd, are responsible for a lot of this, I think. They've had the money, and they want to keep the money. But I don't think it's going to be that way too much longer. I think we're progressing. We're coming into this century.
Do you consider yourself a liberal in the Democratic Party?
Probably. I tried to get away from labels during the campaign. They tried to label me, especially in the last campaign. I ran the last campaign before and lost by 1,000 votes. The opponent labeled me as a radical revolutionary, with innuendos of being a Cuban-trained infiltrator and stuff. I've got some, I suppose, very liberal views in some areas. What I consider myself, I don't know. I've got my opinions. If some people think they're liberal, okay, they're liberal. Some people might think they're radical.
People we talk to assert that in the future, the old liberal bloc, whatever that was, and the blacks and the Mexican-Americans, will coalesce in state government, and then you'll get the changes. But they tend to lump all of them together.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of the liberal wing of the Democratic Party.
Yeah, I can see that. And that's probably what will happen to a great degree.
But do most Mexican-American political leaders see themselves as liberals in that, with that group?
Not all, no. There are some Mexican-Americans which I consider pretty damn conservative. I suppose that, generally speaking, the people that you're talking about now, the liberals, black, white, brown, so forth, are those individuals who base their efforts on humane legislation, legislation for the benefit and the welfare of people, versus special interests, legislation for the big oil companies, the tycoons, the lobbies. Just went downstairs to get cigarettes and I got cornered by three lobbyists down at a coffee shop.
Is it likely to develop any fight over the speaker situation, or is Clayton considered to have it in already?
I think Clayton's got it. There's been a fight already. I think whatever fighting comes from now is going to be inconsequential. He's got over 100 people committed to him, and I think that's the way he's going to stay. I hope he makes a good one. Or at least a fair one.
That's a 2-year term, right?
Yeah, the next election we have, we'll have to go all through it again. Have you spoken with Betty Clayton, by the way? Might be a good idea to get some of his views.
Anything else you wanted to ask?
I don't think so. What should we ask her that we haven't?
It's hard to say until you've talked to a great number of people that you're going to talk to. I'm sure you'll be able to get sort of a picture in your mind as to the better questions, to the questions you should ask. What are some of the issues in Texas that, for example, the question of the right to work law in Texas? The Republicans made a big to-do about it, and they tried to rip some of the more liberal legislators with it. There's a good PR to name it the right to work law. Really big misnomer, but they tried to use that in this last campaign to tell people that they're not going to be able to go to work where they want to, and so on and so forth, trying to move the limelight from Washington and Watergate. There was a big effort there. We had a constitutional convention here not too long ago. It did not pass on the final vote. Did not get its 2/3 that it was supposed to get. There was a big issue about the right to work law. And when the failed to pass the vote on the whole Constitution, many of the Republicans and very conservative Democrats blamed it on labor or the right to work issue. But that wasn't it at all. The conservatives, the Republicans, I think, had that plan from the very beginning to punish some of the liberals and labor in the state. I think the vote was, that had right to work law on that issue, had something to do with it, but a number of other things in the Constitutional Convention. It's another thing I was going to say, I just remembered. There, as I had said in the beginning, Texas is pretty much a one-party state. Republicans are gaining to a certain degree. But there are a hell of a lot of people in the Democratic Party that ought to get the hell out of the Democratic Party and go into the Republican Party, like John Connally did. It's always been that way, you know. He finally just switched when he thought it was convenient. We just have too many Republicans in the Democratic Party here in Texas. And I wish they'd be honest about it and just go ahead and switch parties right now.
Do you see the Republican Party making any gains among Mexican Americans?
Hell no. No way.
So the only way they can build their base is to move the conservatives over?
No, it was quite an effort made by Nixon's people. If you saw some of the, the efforts that were made to try to get Mexican Americans involved in the Democratic Party, there were a number of appointments made when he first came in. And most of those appointments were rich Mexican Americans who didn't necessarily have the welfare of the people in mind when they were appointed. There was that big to-do about Bañuelos, who was appointed, Secretary of the Treasury? And her employing I don't know how many illegal aliens in her company in California. You can see now, as compared to when Nixon first came in, that there aren't a hell of a lot of Mexican Americans in any of those positions anymore. There has been a good deal of discussion as to what role the Razonida Party played in this whole situation with the Republicans. A lot of people are saying the Republicans were feeding them money under the table so that they could break the Mexican-American vote, which has always been traditionally has been Democrat. There might be something to that. I don't know, if you talk to Ben Reyes, he might give you a few more details on that, about just where the Razonida Party was getting some of their money. I can't say for a fact that the Republicans were passing the money, but it was brought up, and it might be of interest to you to look up in the Watergate testimony testimony where that had to do with the Razonida Party and monies or grants or whatever was taking place. It's somewhere in there in all that testimony.
How do you evaluate Rudy Flores' appointment?
Well, Rudy Flores, as I understand it, was an old friend of Governor Briscoe's. I grew up with him around Uvalde, and who was a president or vice president of his bank in Uvalde, Texas. So as an old friend and trusted confidant, I suppose he brought him with him up here to Austin. I don't know that much about Rudy Flores. He's I know him, but he's a very courteous gentleman, calm. I don't know how much he does. I don't know him that well.
How much impact or influence does he have in the Mexican American community?
Hardly anybody knows him, outside of maybe a few of his personal friends in business and people in Uvalde, and of course some people here in Austin now. He's not a political man, I don't think. He hadn't been in politics that much. I'll be trying to talk with him a whole lot in terms of what can be done for some of the legislation that we hope to work with, and different little efforts that can be made.
Is he the first Mexican-American to be in the governor's office?
In this administration, Briscoe?
No,
there had been others in the past. Not a hell of a lot. I can remember only one under really of any in position of consequence. I can remember only one, and that was in, I believe, Preston Smith's administration.
He was only there a few months, so wasn't he?
Right. Humberto Aguirre, if that's the one you're talking about.
But he was the only one.
So I can remember.
John Connally didn't have any.
Let's see, was it John Connally that appointed, or Preston Smith that appointed Roy Barrera, Secretary of State? I think it was Preston Smith, I'm not sure. But there had been very, very few, you can count them on one hand. And they didn't have that much of an impact, because they really didn't have the power to move and be advocates.
Who of the incumbent legislators is most influential among Mexican Americans? Is there a chairman of the Brown Caucus as such?
Yes, there is. The chairman, I think, is Carlos Duran. But I don't think he's the one that has more influence in state. It would have been Joe Bernard, darn it.
Was he defeated this year, Bernard?
Well, he'd been out, then he came back and ran again this year. He was defeated. I see Ben Reyes, Paul Moreno, as a couple of the people with more leadership. They're newer. Some of the fellows that are there, like Carlos, have been there for a number of terms. And Benny and myself have talked a lot. I've got more in common with Ben than any of the other Mexican-American legislators. We're trying to come on with a new style, a new direction, a new advocacy in politics, in Mexican-American politics. Using everything that we've been through, our experiences with movements.
How important is the church in this?
In politics?
In Mexican-American politics, how important is the role of the church?
It depends on the area that you go to, I suppose, but I consider the church more important in terms of the movement, which includes politics, of course, than I do right in politics. I worked with the church before, and our new direction there had been in getting the church to move, getting the local priest to be not only priest to serve spiritual needs of the community, but also to be community organizers and advocates for real needs out of the community, you know, like hunger and housing and employment and so forth. We've got many priests now, we need more who think this way, that are doing that. Here in Austin, two or three that I can name that are movers, you know, in the community. The church can do a lot better than it's doing.
Is the church politically active?
Not really. Only some parishes here in Austin.
Are these more activists, socially conscious priests, also active, at least to the extent of, say, encouraging voter registration and participation?
Very definitely. And that includes Bishop Flores in San Antonio.
Is that going up generally, consistently going up, voter registration among Mexican Americans?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. No, it's going up. It's continuing.
It's unlike the blacks, then.
It's unlike the blacks.
What about younger Mexican Americans? Are they being turned off by politics, or are they getting interested in it?
I think they're getting more interested in it. I don't think they're being turned off. Some of the Anglo kids may be getting turned off, but I don't think that the Mexican kids are. Well, I don't even know that the Anglo kids are getting turned off by it either. I think they're getting turned on little by little. You know. Situation here in Austin, for example, is the Anglo population is staying stable. The black population is decreasing, and the Chicano population is increasing. And so are the registered voters, especially when the community can see a race like ours. When we ran countywide and we won, we beat the Senator Benson. In 2 years, well, in these two times that I've run, I ran in 72 and I ran this year, we had, myself and the people helping us, had to beat 9 opponents. Some of them, of course, we ran twice against. The first time we ran, we had to go into a runoff. We barely lost the runoff because the University of Texas, this is something else that might be interested in. It seems that runoffs are held when universities are have gone home for the semester breaks, which has killed me in that 72 election. I had come out 6,000 votes ahead of all of the other candidates in this particular position. Had the runoff, and I lost between 10,000 and 15,000 votes from the University of Texas when they went home. They had a chance to vote absentee, but it's very difficult to do here in Texas. So I lost 43,000 to 42,000. But this time we played the strategy a little different, taking that into consideration, and we beat them. So back to what I was saying about when the community, when the Mexican-American community can see that we can win and we get some good individuals up there that can move and do some positive things, more people register. I had hundreds of guys come up and tell me at the beer joints, at the pubs, you know, said, "Nah, damn, I'm sure glad that you won. You know, I tell you the truth, I didn't vote, but I just registered last week and I registered my mother, and we're just waiting for the next campaign to come up." So I'm so optimistic about
it. So do you anticipate that the first time a viable Mexican-American candidate runs for statewide office will further strengthen registration and voter participation?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's got to be types of individuals who are well-rounded, who can show some humility and be proud of where they are, have a pretty fair education, and keep the culture, and respect. This is one of the areas where Rasmilla, I think, has made mistakes. My opponent here tried to out-radical me, and in some of the groups where he talked, he thought he'd out-radical me, and he, you know, come out with some profanity. It's one thing about the Mexican-American people in groups like that. They don't do that. I think they, in some cases, some of the Rasunida candidates were looking too much, taking too much from the black movement and the Mau Mau tactics, which doesn't work in our
culture. Does the typical Mexican-American identify with the black? I
don't
think so.
No, we've got our own biculture.
But in terms of issues, there's very little difference, right?
Right.
Educational opportunity, employment, housing. Right. You know, aren't those the basic issues on which blacks and Mexican Americans are both project as number one?
Exactly.
Equal justice under the law.
The whole bit.
Is state employment, do Mexican Americans even come close to being proportionally represented in state employment?
Absolutely not. No way. That's been part of the problem. There are some areas where we're very much different. Some of these testing procedures within state agencies and within police departments are just out of it because they're culturally biased tests.
But combined, what is the black population in Texas, about 12 to 15%?
I think it's less than 12%, I'm not sure.
Combined, between Mexican American and black population, you're talking about close to 30% of the total population.
Sure, a little more than that. Let me see. Yeah, about 30 some odd percent. That's a lot of people. A lot of people.
Anything else you want to add?
I sure hope that in the future, I think the desire is there by generally by the black community and the Mexican-American community to work with the overall Anglo community together on some of these problems. And I'm optimistic that we can come up with a new politic throughout the whole country, certainly I hope here in the South, in the Southwest, where we can work more on people legislation.
How do you view
solving these problems together? Because I don't think we can do it just one particular group by itself.
How do you view Lloyd Benson as a potential presidential candidate?
I don't think he will be making it as the candidate. I don't even think he'll, I may be wrong in this, but I don't think he'll even make it as a vice presidential candidate.
Would he make it among the Texas delegation in 1976?
I don't think so. He's come to the middle a great deal in the past couple of 3 years, but his past is still with him. And, I don't know, I suppose that I would vote for him over a Republican, but I sure as heck am not going to back him at this point in time anyway.
Why did you decide to run for office?
That's probably, it's not a very, I couldn't answer that question in one or two sentences. It has to do with my whole background, where I came from, who I am. As I said a while ago, I was raised as a migrant until I was 17, and for all those years, I just lived out in the fields and housing, which was not really housing, there were barns and dirt floors, and lived in poverty. Seeing a lot of racial discrimination, being thrown out of restaurants, having gone to where I went to school, there were three schools, one for blacks, one for Anglos, and one for Mexican Americans. Talk about a waste. It was very difficult to go through those times economically, and then inside it hurt a lot to get pushed around, oppressed like that. And fortunately, my dad, having no formal education, saw to it that we did have an education by coming back from the migrant trails every September while the rest of the migrants stayed in the fields. We come back to school. I did get out of high school and came to the University of Texas after that. And I sort of lost touch with what we'd been through and what a lot of other people had been through and what a lot of people are going through even now for a year or two there while I was going to university. Coming from a small town and coming to a large university, you know, it was kind of awesome and very impressive to me. But I sort of came back to thinking about people and got into being an organizer for the National Urban League for a year or two, and then getting into various other programs as a trainer, cross-cultural communication, migrants, manpower training, so on and so forth. Worked for the federal government, the state, for the church, for the U.S. Catholic Conference. Worked in Washington as a trainer. And then I decided that my role had changed and that I wanted to do something. Perhaps this was the best place to do it, to make some changes. So very briefly, that's kind of it. Here I am. It's scary, but let's see what we can do from here.
End interview. Gonzalo Barrientos. No more transcription this tape.